So I was on a trip with my wife to Chicago a few weeks ago. So on the as the plane was about to take off, as you know, as the custom on flights, so the stewardess, whoever, gets on the loudspeaker, starts making the regular announcements. The captain is ready to pull away. Captain's ready to pull away. The cabin door has been closed. Please turn off all electronic devices. And then he says, "And I know this is going to cause a lot of you a lot of anxiety, but it is now time to stop texting." And it was, to me, just a very strong statement as to where society has gone nowadays, that a steward on an airplane has to warn people and I guess in a sense validate the anxiety that they're going to experience based on the fact that, and this is a trip to Chicago, so figure, what was the flight, like 2 hours? For 2 hours, they're not going to be able to text anyone, and he had to validate that anxiety. And as a matter of fact, I happen to know a person, someone who I'm fairly close with. He was kicked off the plane because he did not stop texting. He was warned, and the stewardess walked away. She came back as she was making her rounds up and down. He was still doing it. He was warned again. He was still doing it. And then they kicked him off the plane. He just couldn't stop. Pushy, he just couldn't stop texting. Why? Why? Okay, so this is what I want to spend for the next, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes or so on, trying to understand a little bit of this phenomenon, both through a psychological perspective as well as through a Torah perspective, and as you'll see, it really all ties in together. So before we go there, though, I just want to mention a few just Pashut Ha'aros, Pashut, call it Derech Eretz, just things that should be obvious to us, but yet sometimes things just become so regular and such a part of normal society that we don't even understand that maybe what we're doing, should we should stop for a second and think that maybe this isn't exactly right. So first of all, texting in the Beis Medrash. So of course we should not do that. Pashut. We shouldn't probably talk on the cell phone in the Beis Medrash also. Okay. Lamaisa, we all have the Madrigas that we're working on. We all have our Milas, our Chesronos. We're all working on different things. If I were to say to everyone in this Beis Medrash, in this room right now, to say, you are not allowed to say one Sicha Batala, anything in the Beis Medrash at all. Is anyone able to keep to that? No, probably not. Okay, so we're all on our levels. Okay, fine. But texting is a whole new level. It's a whole new way that the Yetzer Hara is reaching out to us and saying, talking to your friend, that's too easy. I can get you to do that in a second. Now I'm going to get you to text the people. So this way, not only is the Yetzer Hara in the form of every single person around you, but now he's in the form of every single person on your contact list. So we have to avoid these things. Cell phones, like a person did in the second floor of the Beis Medrash, she has a box. You come to the Beis Medrash, you're there to learn. You put the cell phones away. Okay, pashut. Goes without saying, even more so, al achas kama v'kama during davening. Texting during davening is, I haven't seen this inside, I haven't asked the posek, but I can't imagine why it's any less of a hefsek in whatever it is, in chazaras hashatz, pesukei zimra, whatever it is, than just turning to someone and talking to them. It doesn't have to be talking. Hefsek can be anything. Anything you're doing that interrupts whatever it is that you're doing, so then it's a hefsek. So whether you're talking, or whether you stop for a long enough time, or if you're texting, so all of these things, pashut ha'aser.
What about if you'll be able to learn more if you just send the text without having to walk outside?
Ah, so that's a good shiloh. That's a good shiloh. Let's say your charuso is running late and they text you to say something, whatever. I don't know. So you're right. So how do you find that balance? Is it worth saying that forget the cell phone, turn it off, and that extra minute or two, whatever? My personal idea is to say, turn it off. Turn it off. If it costs you a couple extra minutes, so what? That's my personal nitya. I don't know. But that you have to ask more of a posek to get an official psak on that. But I would say it's worth it. For what the cell phone is doing to the overall avirah of the Beis Medrash, turn it off. It's not worth it. That's what I would say. Your hand was up? No? Okay. Fine. Okay. And now, what I would say could be the most important of all of them. Most important of all of them. Because Derech Eretz Kadmon LaTorah, Ben Adam LaChaveiro, in a sense, has a greater place in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eyes than even Ben Adam LaMakom. We have to ask forgiveness, Ben Adam LaChaveiro, before we can ask forgiveness, Ben Adam LaMakom. When you're talking to another human being, and we're face to face, I'm talking to someone, I should not be taking out my phone and saying, "Hold on, you'll keep talking, sorry." That we should not be doing. And you'd be shocked how often that happens. People might just, we're talking, and okay, I'm listening. If you're talking to another human being, then you talk to that person. You don't take out the phone and start texting. Okay? It's a derech eretz. It's a simple just consideration, being considerate of the person who I'm talking to, that we don't just do that. This becomes especially important when we are, let's say, in a restaurant, or we are at a store, at a cashier, if we are at Nagel's or in the calf store, in the calf or whatever it is, and we're passing by with our food, don't hand the card, and in the meantime, look down, whatever, okay, and keep walking. Look at the person. Hi, how you doing? What's going on? How's your day? Okay, good. I guarantee you, whatever you were texting can wait the 10 seconds. I guarantee it. All right? So these are just really points of just derech eretz, things that very often slip our minds just based on, again, just that things have become such a norm in society that it's just the way life is. So we have to make sure we're above that. We have to make sure that we are, in a sense, in all the goyim, we have to separate ourselves from such things. And texting does have a place. It definitely does, but only in the right place. Okay. So now, let's try to understand what this whole phenomenon is all about. And let me just makdiv by saying texting does not only include what we're going to be talking about, doesn't only include texting, but it includes any type of, call it, technologically, social media, whatever you call it, you want to call it Facebook, or Twitter, or texting, or blogging. I think that pretty much covers everything. Okay, so this will include all those different ideas. It's all different ways of human interaction without it being face-to-face. Okay? And this is what we're going to try to understand. The word levado has a big place throughout all of Tanakh. It appears many different times. I have five sources here. Five. One, of course, one of the famous ones from Yeshayahu, Perak Beis, Pasuk Yud Aleph, V'niskov Hashem levado b'yom ahu. That on that day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will remain levado. How do you translate that? Translate alone. Pashup Shah, literally speaking, levado means alone. Okay? And what do we have also? Another famous one, levado?
Yaakov,
very good. Yaakov, Ayavasa, Yaakov, levado. The Yaakov Avinu remained, again, alone. And what happened right after that? Vayaka Vishimo. Exactly. Okay, Vayavasa Yaakov levado, Vayavasa Kishimo. It's right at that point where Yaakov was, again, loosely translated or literally translated, being alone. Yitzhahara chaps in on him right then and says, okay, I'm going to go for him right now. In Shmos, we just read in Parshas Mishpatim, Shmos Perachavdal, Pasuk Beis, Vanigash Moshe levado el Hashem, Vehem lo yigashu v'am lo yalu imo. That was Moshe Rabbeinu who was zoche to go up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, levado, him alone, to go up to Hashem. Okay? And as we say in the Tefillah, Adon Olam, Hashem Alach, Mutem Koyetzi, Nivar, Lis, Nasav, Bechef, Sakol, Aizai, Melech, Shmon, Nekral, V'acharei, Kechlos, HaKol, levado, Yimloch, Nora. And after all is said and done, after everything is completed, levado, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will rule, levado, alone, by himself, Kaviyachol. And then, just one more example, Kimerosh Tzrim Erenu Mikvos Ashurenu, says Bilam about Bnei Yisrael in his, what were supposed to be klalos, but turned out to be brachos. And how does he define Bnei Yisrael? Hen am levadad yishkon uvagoyim lo yischashav. That it is a nation that dwells alone, and it is not counted amongst all the other nations. We see the term levado used in all these different areas, in all these different contexts. So we want to understand what exactly this word levado means. Okay? Especially considering who is it used to define. Who is it used to define? Who do we speak about? We spoke about V'niskav Hashem levado, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We said V'yivasa Yaakov levado. We said V'nigash Moshe levado. And we said, again, Hashem levado yimloch nora. And then about all B'nai Yisrael, hen am levadad yishkon. When the same term is used to define HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yaakov, Moshe, and B'nai Yisrael, it has to be a term that has some kind of importance. Let's understand what it's all about. The Medrash going on, those two psukim actually, in Bereishis Rabbah, equates the levado status of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kaviyochol again, with the levado status of Yaakov. And it says, Vayvasa Yaakov levado vayyavek ish imo, and it quotes the pasuk that Ein kakel yeshur rochev shemayim be'ezreko, Rabbi Rechia b'shem Rabbi Simon Omar. Here's what he says. Fascinating connection. Listen to what he says. Ein kakel. There's no one like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. Now, seemingly, he's going off on a little play on words. Umi kokel yeshurun. Okay, but who is maybe like Hashem? Yisrael Saba. Yisrael Saba. What the reference there is, I'm not sure. Yisrael Saba. Ma kodesh baruch hu kasuv bo. Just like by Hashem it says, v'niskav Hashem levado. Just like it says by Hashem, that he remained alone. Af Yaakov, so to by Yaakov, v'yivaser Yaakov levado. But Yaakov also was levado, he was alone. Right? It's a fascinating medrash. Comparing the loneliness of Yaakov to that of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So now, explains Rav Yeruchim. That when we see this term, Vayivasa Yaakov Levado, that he remained alone, how would you define that? How would you explain that? You would explain that, what was happening, just Metzius, what was the storyline at that point? What was going on? He had his entire family with him. He had made them travel ahead, but he had been left behind. Rashi quotes the Pachim Ketanim, he had left behind, he went to get them. Vayivasa Yaakov Levado, and then Vayavik Ishim, comes in the Yetzihara to fight with him. So how do we translate Levado? How would you say, what does that mean?
By himself
in what?
Vulnerable.
Vulnerable, very good. Perfect word, that's exactly what I would have said. Vulnerable, he's by himself. All of Bnei Yisrael, whoever was part of Bnei Yisrael at that point, had gone away already, and he was by himself, he was vulnerable. But how can that not be pshat? How do we know it's not pshat? Because then how would you compare the levado of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the levado of Yaakov? Maybe levado means lonely. That he feels an emptiness. He's lonely, he's by himself. Can that be? Of course not. Because then how is that levado of Yaakov comparable to the levado of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So he explains as follows. Being levado means, HaKadosh Baruch Hu being levado means that we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not create this world because he needs us. He wasn't sitting around kaviyachol, whatever this may mean, in the Shemayim and thinking, you know what, there's something missing in my life. I need to fill that void. Let me create the world. And then, okay, and then I'll have people giving to me. They'll be davening to me. They'll be doing my service. And that'll make me feel better about myself. So Rachman Chos V'Shalom, of course that's not pshat. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, he does not need us, we need him. It was out of pure 100% chesed that Hashem created us and allow us to get hana from him. But he, again, Kaviyachol as a being, is completely whole. He doesn't need anything else around him. He is Shalom, he is perfect. These even using the words is call it a tzimtzum. We have to use words because we have to refer to Hashem in some way that we can understand. But even saying that Hashem is perfect is, in a sense, limiting because that's using human terminology, as if this desk is created perfectly. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is created perfectly. Okay, so I don't mean to say Chas V'Shalom. I don't mean to belittle it, of course. But when we refer to God, of course, in whatever perfect does mean on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's level, that's how we refer to Him. There's no need for any outside, external sources for anything. He is by himself in a sense that he doesn't need or rely on anything else. Okay? Yaakov Avinu being, Vayivaser Yaakov Levado, what was so crucial about him being Levado at that point? He didn't need anything else around him. He wasn't reliant on external sources for any part of his life. There was a Shlemus to Yaakov Avinu, to such a point where he was labeled Levado by himself. And you see how crucial it was that Yaakov reached such a level of Shlemus. How do you see how crucial of a level it was? Because what happened? Vayavek Ishimo. Kolagodol mechavero yitzogodol hemenu. Whoever is greater than his friend, his Yetzirah is even greater. This wasn't some little trick. It wasn't the Yetzirah coming, masking himself in some form. It was Mamish the Yetzihara coming to battle Yaakov. Mamish at that point. Why? Because he was Levado. He was Shalom. He was whole and complete. He was, again, alone in that sense. He didn't need anything else. He had reached such a level. Now the Yetzihara himself has to come. I have to attack him. I have to get him now. He's reaching such a level comparable to our Kaddish Baruch Hu. I have to hop in on him now. That can't be. Being Levado, being alone, means that I don't need anything else around me. I'm not reliant on something somewhere else that can make me feel anything about myself. call it a self-confidence, call it a stability, call it a self-validation, whatever term you want to use, it means that I'm okay. I don't need anything else around me. Ravolbi in a few different places. So he says, I'll read it from the Sefer. This is from Shiurei Chumash, from Ravolbi, and this pasuk by Rasi Yaakov Levado. So he quotes from the Kuzari, and he says, Omer shetamen chachom, gam kishu besocha chevro. So a Talmud Chacham, what is the definition of a real Talmud Chacham? It's someone that who, even though he's within a group of people, okay, so he's surrounded by friends, okay, fine. Hu levado, but still he is levado, he is by himself. By himself does not mean lonely. Alone and lonely are two totally different terms. If you're alone, you're only lonely if you feel lonely. A person can be alone and can feel perfectly with other people. So he says, it's Leinu, by us normal people, as Ravolbi refers to himself. So a person will judge himself based on the people he is with. If I'm with a good chevra, okay, so I'll be able to feel good about myself. Who margishes atzma yoser batuach, so he'll feel more sure of himself. The kasha hu levado, and when he is by himself, hu eino margish batuach. So then he'll doubt himself. Have that lack of self-confidence. I don't have anyone around me picking me up. So who am I? What am I? Uchashehu nimtza b'chug acher azhu legamri avud. And when he's in a different state, he's totally lost. Sogan hagar shekazos, says Ravolbi, this type of being, this type of situation a person lives in, eina al pi Torah, this is not a Torah way of living. Talmud Chacham b'chol makom b'chol matzav shehu hareyu Talmud Chacham. A person who's a real Talmud Chacham is a Talmud Chacham regardless of his surroundings. Ve'ein madrigaso teluya ba'achirim. These are the four key words. Ve'ein madrigaso teluya ba'achirim. He doesn't need people around him to validate himself. I don't need to be in the top shir to feel good about myself. Or you can say a little different from Ravolbi, that I don't need to be the best guy in the lowest shir to feel good about myself. However a person's mind works. Whatever I am, I know I am. And I don't need the people around me making me feel either better or worse. I am who I am. That's, I think the Sforno explains that when Moshe asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, after at the burning bush, he says, B'nai Yisrael are going to ask me what your name is. What should I tell them? So what does Hashem say? Ekiyeh asher ekiyeh. And the Sforno there says, I believe he says, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is b'chol matzav, b'chol makum, b'chol zman, or something. He is the same being. He never changes. Ekiyeh asher ekiyeh. I am who I am, and I will always be. There's no changing. There's no up and down depending on my surroundings, depending on what's going on around me. But rather, there's a metzius that I am, and that is a stable and confident metzius. And I don't need things around me picking me up and pulling me down. There's a famous psychiatrist who was a Jewish psychiatrist who went through the Holocaust. His name is Viktor Frankl. So he had a monumental work in which he writes about his theory of the meaning of life that a person has to find, and then it's called Man's Search for Meaning. It's a tremendous book, and anyone who has any time, free time on their hands, should definitely read it. It's a very short book. It's like 150 pages. For the first 75 pages or so, he describes his experiences in the Holocaust and his observations. And for that second set of 75 pages or so, he describes what he calls logotherapy. Logo from the Latin, I think, meaning. The definition of the word logo is meaning. That a person has to have meaning in his life. And in his observations in the Holocaust, he made a clear distinction between those who survived and those who didn't. And the Chas V'Shalom, are we to sit here and to judge anyone there? Of course, Chas V'Shalom. But from his perspective, what he saw was when a person going through the Holocaust, when he saw them start to lose their meaning in life, he knew it was just a matter of time before they were going to give up and become too weak to withstand the Nazis' Yimach Shemam persecution. He knew that was the defining point. Someone who somehow had something to live for, whether it was the belief that their relative was still alive, their wife, their husband, their children, their parents were still alive, and they were living for that. Or whether it was just to say to the Nazis that you're going to torture me, but I'm going to survive anyway. Someone who had the meaning, even within the suffering, even within the horrible, unfathomable suffering that they experienced, someone who found meaning in that, he knew that person had a chance to survive. And that's the basis of his entire psychological theory. He goes against the whole Freudian psychological perspective. Freudian psychology is based on what? Well, my mother, when I was 2 years old, she held me in a certain way, and she treated me in a certain way. And then when I was 5 years old, my father did this. And he goes all through this whole childhood thing. And if a person wants to be a well-rounded and mentally stable adult, he has to go back into his childhood, and he has to resolve any issues he has from his childhood. So Viktor Frankl doesn't like that. He said, okay, maybe that's important to maybe talk about. Okay, fine. But if you want to be a mentally stable individual and you want to be a happy person, you have to have meaning in your life. He coined the term, this was written, I don't know exactly, it was probably 40, 50 years ago already. He coined the term Sunday neurosis. You know what Sunday neurosis is? Sunday neurosis means that a person works through a whole week and he's busy. And he gets back from work at night and he's tired. Okay, fine. He makes it through the night. But comes Sunday and a person has nothing occupying his time. So what does he do? Now I'm left with myself. I'm left with my own thoughts. Now what do I do? So this was 30, 40 years ago he wrote this. He called it Sunday neurosis. We can imagine how true this is nowadays. What's the prototypical Sunday neurosis? One word? Come on, we just passed it. Very good, football. What would this country do without football? Rahmana Litzlan, next year, if there really is a strike and there's no football, I don't know what people are going to do. There's going to be, I'm not joking, I would not be surprised if there is a national hysteria and you see the numbers of people needing therapy and antidepressant medication spikes like crazy. I would not be surprised at all. Because they're left with their own thoughts. They don't have work keeping them busy. Now what do? I'm just left with myself. And if a person doesn't have meaning in their life, and they can't find it in an external source, then they're left with nothing. But that's the problem. And that's what Bilam saw in Bnei Yisrael. He said about Bnei Yisrael, "Hein am levadad yishkon." We live alone. We are levada. We are by ourselves. We don't need the external sources that the nations of the world have. We are able to look within ourselves and find value and meaning in our lives and be able to be happy with our lives purely based on that. We don't need the outside sources. We don't need the football games. We don't need the celebrity craze. I don't need to attach myself to the fact that some celebrity just married some other celebrity and therefore now I could be happy also. Or the fact that I'm watching a certain TV show and a certain couple finally got together, so now I can find real closure in my life also. As if there's any connection whatsoever between me and these people. But yet, this is where people find meaning in their lives. This is where the whole Twitter fascination comes from. I need to know every single thing that, I can't even say certain names, that some whatever, I need to know what they're doing on a moment-by-moment basis. I need to know. Because without it, what am I? So I need to know. I mamish need to know what they're doing. Who cares? Mamish, who cares? I gotta tell you this, share this one thing. There's a magazine out there. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. Hopefully you have not. For whatever reason I've come to know what it is. So it's called Us Weekly. You guys ever hear of it? Us Weekly? So Us Weekly is like People magazine. Everyone's heard of People. Okay? But Us Weekly. So yeah, I've seen it in ShopRite. You know, you see it on the Aschatayim and Maskir Ayom. Halvai, I was on such a level that I never looked. I was blind myself as I'm walking through the register to pay for my groceries. Okay, so I've seen it. Us Weekly. I always thought it was like U.S. Weekly. It's just a play. You know, U.S., United States Weekly. But someone explained to me, you know what Us Weekly is? You know why it's called Us Weekly? Anyone know? Good. Baruch Hashem. Us Weekly because it shows the movie stars and the celebrities, and it shows them in ways that make them just like us. Us Weekly, as in like, We're all the same. We're just like them. They're just like us. So they call it Us Weekly. And someone even told me there's a special section in the magazine where they take pictures of celebrities doing things just like us. Where they'll go to a store also and buy groceries. They'll take a trip with their children to get ice cream. As if any sane and normal human being would have a hava mina that they're not just like us. But yes, hein anu v'dad yishkon, we can have that perspective. But Rachmana Litzlan, the nations of the world don't. If you're a celebrity, you have a different life. Why? I have no idea. And why my life should be hingent on that? So that's Sunday neurosis. That's a way of living that says, I cannot rely on my own life. I need to live vicariously through everyone else. So when the Packers are winning the Super Bowl, we won the Super Bowl. What do you mean we won the Super Bowl? You sat on your couch, you were watching the game. What do you mean we won the Super Bowl? I can't stand it. Guys on my MTA hockey team, no. If you say we, if you refer to your sports team as we, you are running extra suicides. We is something that you're a part of. We are not part of any professional sports teams. It's entertainment. It's 3 hours of entertainment on a Sunday afternoon if that's what you really need. But that's it. We should not have any emotional connection to that. Doing that is Sunday neurosis. Doing that is Yechashev Begoyim. That is being like the Goyim. We are Hinam Levadad Yishkon. We are Levado. We don't need the external outside sources. And this is where we bring it all back to texting, to Facebook, to blogs, to Twitter. Okay? There's a famous pediatrician. I don't remember, I don't know when he lived, when he wrote this. His name is Donald Winnicott. Within the mental health field, within social work, so there are many different theoretical perspectives of how to view human development. Okay? Some of them border on just, call it very weird. Others are, mamish, you see how logical and brilliant they are. So Donald Winnicott pointed out that, as many of the theories explain, that there's a natural progression that an infant goes through as he reaches toddlerhood, and then childhood, and then adolescence, and adulthood. There's a natural progression. The more you progress through those stages, the more independence you have, the more you, in a sense, distance yourself from your caretaker, who's usually the mother. An infant, what does an infant do when it feels alone? When it feels by itself, what does it do? What does an infant do? Come on, guys. Cries. Cries out loud. And what happens when it cries? What happens when an infant cries? Exactly. The mom comes running. Mom comes running, grabs on and holds and hugs and kisses and showers him with emotion. What happens when an infant becomes a toddler? Does that happen as quickly? Not so much. Not so much. Parents have to learn to give the child a little independence, and the children themselves have to gain a little bit of independence. They go off to school. Then they go off to high school. Then go off to college. Says Donald Winnicott, as we progress through these stages, we need what's called a transitional object. Something that we can hold on to that as, even though I am distancing myself from that original caretaker, from my mother, from my father, whoever it is, but still I'm holding on to something. A physical object, he says. A transitional object is the term that he coined. Give an example of an infant's, call it a toddler's transitional object. Something that a baby holds on to, a child holds on to. Teddy bear, what else? Blanket, very good. These are things that children hold it for. It's for security. That's what they call a security blanket. Because as that baby becomes a child and it gains more independence and feels, in a sense, more lonely, it has to hold on to something. And at some point, we have to take that away. As we become older, our transitional objects become more sophisticated. It can become a picture in my wallet. It can become pictures on my wall. And one of my professors, when I was in social work school, so she theorized, and it's mamish true, what are today's transitional objects? For all of us, what are our transitional objects? Things that no matter how independent we are, no matter how alone we are never truly alone. What are they? Social media. Social media, in specific, cell phones. Okay, a person who carries around there, well, now it's reached a new milestone because now you can have Facebook, Twitter, and blogs all on your cell phone. This was written, I had this class, it was probably 6 or 7 years ago. So then already it wasn't so popular to have all these different things on your cell phone. You just had a cell phone. And believe it or not, a cell phone was just used for talking and texting. So that's what she said. These are transitional objects that we need to have with us because I can't be alone. I can't just be by myself. I can't feel secure with who I am and have meaning in my life. I need to have that instant connection, that potentially instant connection to everyone around me. So I can never be too far away from my phone because if I'm with my phone, I know that I'm no more than one click away from being in contact with someone. Now, don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. Being in contact with people is a crucial thing, 100%. But it shouldn't be something that we rely on for who we are. Like Rav Volbi said, a Talmid Chacham is who he is, regardless of who he's around and who's with him. But with the texting and with the Facebook and the blogs, all it is a medium for us to not be alone, to avoid feeling who I am, that I need to text, and I'm addicted to it so much. I've seen this. I've had guys come to the Beis Medrash. They want to learn with me, not because I'm in whatever. They want to learn. They came to me to say, "Can we set up a chavrusa?" So I'm not dragging them to the Beis Medrash at all. I'm not forcing them to be there. And yet, while we're sitting there, we're sitting at the table, we're learning. They're like this. They're looking at me, but they're down like this. Oh my God. First of all, like, I see you. So besides the Derech Eretz aspect, okay, fine. It's like, what am I? I'm like blind. Like, I can't see you going like this. Fine. So besides the pure Derech Eretz aspect, okay. But they asked me to learn. I didn't force them to do it. They're the ones who wanted to learn, and yet they can't put it away. Why not? Why not? I can't pass judgment on any specific person. And this is just as I was very, very meduyok in the sign. It's a Torah hashkafa. This is just one way of looking at it. This is not the end all be all of understanding these things. But it's a Torah hashkafa. If a person is not levado, but a person is lonely, he's not alone. He's lonely. Then he needs these things. He doesn't find meaning in his own life, and he needs that connection to something, to somehow. I can't just be by myself. And that's where we fall into the trap. When we start relying on all these other avenues to find meaning in our lives, that's when we fall into the trap. If we have a thought in our heads, we don't have to put it on a blog. If we just did something in our homes, I don't need to update my Facebook status. And I just want to make clear for the record, I'm not judging people who do that. There is a tremendous value for many people who do it. Specifically, women who are taking care of children all day long and need to be in contact with each other, a quick thing, there's tremendous value in that 100%. But like everything in life, it's a Yetzirah, and if we use it for the right reasons, it's good, but for the wrong reasons, with the wrong hashkafa behind it, then it can be very detrimental. We have to find meaning in everything we're doing. We have to understand that there's meaning in everything we're doing. I'm sitting and learning Torah right now. What do I need to pay attention to a text message for? I am doing the most important thing in the world. What do I need a text message for? I just did something in my life that was important. What do I need to blog about it to 1,000 different people? Who cares? I don't need to tell everyone else. I know, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows. There's a Medrash that says that in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, when Nevuah was still around, that there would be Nevi'im who would write down everything that happened in the world. I don't know the exact details of the Medrash, but it goes something like this, that there would be Nevi'im around who would write down everything that happened in the world. Now that there's no Nevuah, so who's keeping track of the world? Who's writing down what happens? HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Eliyahu HaNavi are sitting and they're writing down everything we're doing. Forget the blogs, we don't need them. Eliyahu HaNavi and HaKadosh Baruch Hu are writing down what I'm doing. That's all I need. I don't need anything else. Our thoughts, our learning, our davening, our mitzvos, or just our stam daily activities have enough meaning in them. We don't need these other avenues. But only if we recognize the meaning that it has in them. It's a constant conversation we have amongst the Skam Mashkichim of the challenge that when guys start YU, it becomes such a nisayon to see value in everything they're doing. Because guys come from yeshiva, Baruch Hashem, Eretz Yisrael, learning stark, 12, 13, 14, 15 hours a day, and then they come to YU and they're bogged down with classes and responsibilities and papers and choices and errands and responsibilities, things they have to take care of. Why is that not Avodas Hashem? Why can I not find meaning in the fact that I just did my laundry? Believe it or not, that's an important thing, and that's Avodas Hashem, 100%. A person being independent, doing their own laundry, yes, that is Avodas Hashem, 100%. And you can find meaning in that. I don't have to be texting while I'm doing my laundry. I can feel good about the fact that that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, mitzvah,
I could say it's having a guf naki. Say an extension of that. I could say it's a mitzvah of being a ben Torah, being a ben Melech. Not everything has to be defined within the 613 mitzvahs. I could be doing a stam action. Playing basketball is not a mitzvah. But if I'm doing it because I need to relax, I need to let out some stress. Sorry? Okay, good. We could put it under there. There are many mitzvahs, terminologies we can use as umbrellas to cover all these things. But the bottom line is that we have to find the meaning in everything we're doing. And assuming we have the meaning in these things, then we don't need these other areas of life. We don't need to be checking up someone else's Facebook page to see what they're doing. Who cares? I know what I'm doing. And I don't need to be texting back and forth so calmly. I don't need, if I'm bored, I'm sitting around doing nothing, I don't need to be texting someone. Next time you're in an elevator, you get into an elevator with one other person, and you're going to be in there, let's say you're going up to 10 floors. Watch what happens. I give it 3 seconds, 3 seconds, before someone puts their hand in their pocket and takes out their phone. Mama's 3 seconds. I'll tell you guys, next time that happens, get in the elevator, hold your hands like this, and say, you know what, I'm going to take the ride. Now I'm going to watch the numbers go on. That's all I'm going to do. I'm not going to do anything else. See the difference it feels to get in the elevator. You'll feel good. We don't need these other things. When you need them, good, use them. But we don't need to rely on them. We have to be levado. We have to be by ourselves. That's the way Yaakov was. That's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. That's the way Bilam gave us the bracha for. Hinam levadad yishkon. We don't need these external sources. We have such tremendous meaning in our lives. Let's rely on that. I just want to close with one, call it a thought, just to whet your appetite a little bit. But with all of the tremendous milas we've spoken about levado, okay, what is one, in one area of life that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says levado is not good, is what? Very good. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, lo tov heyos adam levado. It is not good for a person to be levado, as lo ezer kenegdo. Let's make him a helpmate. Something to think about, how, if we're talking about the crucial importance of levado, Osana Kosh Baruch Hu says, wait a second, it's not so good to be levado, I need to give you a wife. Something to think about. Shkoches.
Wait, the Ein Kashem and the Ein Kashem is like Ein Kel.